This audio is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442. To visit our websites, they are cbcg.org and biblicaltruthministries.org. These are comments before Feast of Trumpets 2007, talking about the Codex W that I talked about the week before. And I'm going to get a CD from the Friar Photography, which is in the Smithsonian Institute, where they have the Codex W. And since those appear to be done in the early 70s, and evidence going clear back that Lee Woodard says goes clear back to 36, and I sent him the information, he's received it very well, he sent an email back saying thank you for the information and the things about the canonization that we have. He takes it back 36. We take it back beginning with Matthew 10 years earlier, 26, when Jesus started his ministry, based upon looking at Matthew 5, 6, and 7, where it looks like he was, taking notes from a sermon. Especially, the Beatitudes there in Matthew 5. But here in Matthew 24, when I get it, here's what I want to check, because what makes the Codex W so unusual is that it's copies of the four Gospels that are very early. So I want to see if here in, let's pick it up here in verse 14, Matthew 25 and verse 14. And this gospel shall be proclaimed in all the world for a witness to all nations. Now, let's stop and think about the ability to do so now in how many different forms. Printed word. There has been radio for decades. Television. Now we have the internet. And we're getting devices where you can plug into the internet anywhere you are without any electricity, as long as your battery is up in your iPod or your BlackBerry. I don't know why they call it BlackBerry, but anyway. And Bob Carter uses a BlackBerry all the time. He's got everything in there, one little handy thing. And he's already asked me, and others have asked me, are we going to have it BlackBerry-ized for the whole Bible? And the answer is yes, we probably will when we're done. Okay? But think of all the ways that the gospel, the methods the gospel can be preached. Printed, spoken, and spoken can be any electronic means that we have. Plus we have all the... just think of how many different sermons there are. Think about what we have. We have 1,600 sermons, Bible studies, and we're just one small little group. So think about how it can be everywhere in the world. There is even Trinity Broadcasting right now, which has a satellite devoted. Of course, it's bringing the Protestant version of the gospel in Arabic, and it's being broadcast. Anyone in any Arab nation in the world can tune into it. Radio, television. Now, granted, it's not preaching the complete gospel. Granted, it is preaching a version of the name of Jesus Christ. But when you consider that it's going to Muslims that are devoted in varying degrees, and I'm sure you have Laodicean Muslims, and perhaps many of them have come to the United States and are known as moderate Muslims, but who knows? Anyway, and since we don't know how much time we have left, and we'll talk about the financial things here in just a little bit, We do not know the completeness of what this verse is going to do. I know in the past when one Church of God was printing 8 million copies of The Plain Truth and were on radio stations around the world, they said, well, the gospel has been preached to the whole world, but not to that last generation. Now then, well, a little later, we'll talk about the two witnesses, because they're going to do some things. So when we look at this and read this verse, it has a whole lot more to it than we've ever imagined, correct? Now, the parallel account in Mark 13 says the gospel will be published in all the world. And then, of course, I sent out the article, Why So Many Bibles in the World? And, there are going to be plenty more Bibles that'll be out there. It says, and then the end shall come. Now, here's the verse I want to check when I get that CD version of the Codex W. Oh, and I found out why he had that page of Luke upside down in that little printout I had last week. It was upside down so we could read down in the corner the authentication marks that they put in there. See, now they coded them. They coded them to show that they were authentic, and he said in another one that they were making as many copies as they could, getting them out to as many cities as they could. As soon as they were finished, they went out and took them out to the churches. And what does it tell you when they have to have authentic copies, as I pointed out last week? There were copies which were not authentic. So then this becomes a very critical thing. So here's the verse I want to check. Verse 15, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place. Now the parenthetical statement, let the one who reads understand. Now if it is not in the Codex W, what does this tell us? It tells us it's pre-temple destruction. See, because none of the writings of the New Testament talk about the destruction of the temple as past tense. It is always future tense. And there are no writings in the New Testament which talk about it as present tense. So if this will be a test for me when I get the Gospel of Matthew and read it and find it, the one who reads, let him understand. So if it's not there, yes, indeed, he does have, that Codex W is a very early document. Now, if it is there, what does it tell us? It tells us that if it was copied in the 70s A.D., they understood that the desolation of the temple and Jerusalem, and there was not the abomination of desolation that Daniel spoke of, it did not occur. Now, we'll talk about that a little later with the sermon today. So that's one I want to check. And then they also have it in the Gospel of Mark, so I want to check it there. Now, let's talk about some differences between the economic situation, and it's a world economic situation today that was different in 1929. So any input of you have, feel free, we'll get it on the record here. Now, in 1929, here are some similarities. In 1929, the total debt of the United States, now I don't know how we can compare it to the world and look at the world statistics today and understand that the dollar is really a world currency. It's the world trading currency. The ratio of debt to gross national product was 290%. In other words, the debt was over three times of what the gross national product is. Today, it is a little over 300%. Of course, and that's in trillions of dollars. In 1929, they dealt in cash and maybe a fair amount of checks. But everything was cash. The banks had to have cash reserve. And I remember Reuben Henshaw, Eileen and Reuben Henshaw, both Jonathan and David were born up in the church rented an apartment next to them, and both of them were born in their home. And he was telling me what he did to help the Idaho banks, because this is when, during the Depression, this is when the feds were coming around and actually going into the banks to count the physical money, to see if they had enough physical money for the bank to stay in operation. They had to have a certain percentage of actual cash in order for them to stay open. And if they didn't, the feds would close them down. And this is how they got a lot of these little country banks in to the Federal Reserve System. And that was one of the propositions that they used during the Depression to bring them in. So what he did, he and others, he was one of the drivers. When the inspectors would come to a bank, say like in Caldwell, California, and just down the road from it was Napa, and just up the road from there was Meridian. So the feds were making their tours going right down the highway, see. So as soon as the federal inspectors left the bank, if I said Caldwell, California, I meant Idaho. Okay. Yeah. Caldwell, Idaho, Napa, Idaho, Meridian, Idaho, Boise, Idaho, those were all on one road. So if I said California, thanks. Anyway, what they would do, they had a big car ready. You know, one of these big old limousines you've probably seen on old-time movies. And as soon as the feds were done counting the money in that bank, they boxed it up, put it in the car, and the car went down to the next bank before the inspectors got there, and they got that money in there, and they could count the money. So they weren't able to close down these little country banks they wanted to close down because the rules that they set were met. So they did this for about a dozen banks, okay? So that's a total different proposition than we have today. We'll talk about it, what we have today, okay? So when you hear comparisons with 1929 and a Great Depression coming on, there are a great deal of differences. However, the differences are going to eventually result in a greater fall than 1929. And also, it's very interesting, they now know when they go back and look at the record that they would have recovered from the Depression sooner had not Roosevelt been elected and they got all these government programs going. So that's a matter of conjecture, so we won't get into that because That's not the point of what we're discussing here. All right, let's look at what we have that's different today. Number one, the Federal Reserve System is not only in America, but now they have central banks in every nation of the world. And they have a central bank for all the central banks. Anyone knows what the central bank is and where it is? International Monetary Fund is a little higher than Federal Reserve, so is the World Bank. But it's in Switzerland. In Basel, Switzerland. It is the international central clearinghouse for all mammoth transactions between governments, large corporations, and is ultimately, for banks in the world, a bank of last resort to borrow. What else do we have today that are counted as reserves that they didn't have in the 1929 Depression? They have treasury bonds. Treasury bonds are nothing more than IOUs. Now, if, say, Richard here has a note that I signed, and I say, Richard, I owe you $20,000. The note to you is worth $20,000, provided I pay, correct? Mm-hmm. Yes. And since you check me out and trust me, you feel confident that I'll pay you back, so you loan me the $20,000. Now, after a while, you could even sell that note. So, a debt to me becomes an asset to Richard. So, likewise with the banks. The U.S. government borrows this money, issues bonds to the banks, and the banks put them in their vault and say what? We have these assets as a part of our capital assets and reserve to run this bank. Which is, in effect, what? Paper. A figment of the imagination. Only if the government makes the interest payments, which they do, because that's less than making, you know, the payment for the whole thing. But now they have so many, can they ever collect on the full face value of it?
No.
No. See. Money today is a very small fraction of what is considered money. Let's call it spendable funds as evidenced by checks or cash, and cash is not cash because it says this is a Federal Reserve note. Used to be backed by gold. Used to be backed by silver. Used to say, pay to the bearer on demand, $20 worth of gold or $20 worth of silver or whatever, you see. So therefore, you could have confidence in it because you could go to the banking window and you could say, all right, I want to redeem this for the gold or the silver. Today you can't do that. What do we have in addition to all of the debt assets that the banks have? Your house mortgage is also used as an asset by the banks. See, all of these debt instruments, personal, corporate, state, national, international, all of those debt instruments then represent an asset to a bank. But what else, and what do I mean an asset to the bank, and what do they do with it? Well, here's what they do. With that, they are given the authority legally, because the Congress has voted for it, that banks can loan against their assets up to 88%, sometimes even 90, 92, 93%. So when they talk about bank reserves, that means of the assets they have, they cannot borrow against that reserve, whether it's 12%, 10%, 8%, and sometimes when the banks are in real trouble, the Federal Reserve will lower that down to nearly nothing. Which means then, if there is a run on the bank for people to withdraw funds, notice I didn't say money, they can disregard their stated asset holdings in notes. Now, do you all understand that? This is what all the banks are doing. Okay. Now let's talk about credit cards. They did not have any credit cards at all in 1929. Credit cards are what? An issuance of money up to a certain limit, depending on who you are and what your credit score is and so forth. Then you can take that credit card and you can buy things on credit. So the banks have, they have how many of these credit cards out there? Thousands, billions, millions, millions. Now, question, because we'll show you how the banks are manipulating so that they can get their paper stated cash reserves, debited notes, cash reserves higher. So I'm going to ask you a question. How many have been receiving in the mail advertisements for credit cards where if you do bank transfers, you pay no interest for, say, up to a year? I get two or three every week.
Yeah.
See? Why would they do that? Because these banks want you to transfer the debt from the current credit card that you have with whatever bank you have it with, to their bank. So now you give a transfer of balance, say maybe you owe $5,000 on this credit card, and they give you a check when they approve your new card, and you can write it out for $5,000. Now that $5,000 is deducted off of the debt reserve that the current bank has and goes into the new bank, so now they increase their credit reserves by $5,000. Which means then they don't have to pay you any interest, because if they borrowed that money from the feds, how much would they have to borrow? How much would they have to pay? Well, current right now is around 4.75. So 0% for a year is a whole lot cheaper than paying 4.75 to the Federal Reserve for a year, right? So that's what they're doing. So whenever you get these, does this tell us the banks are needing more credit reserve debt instruments to keep the bank in financial operation? Yeah, Robin, Peter to pay Paul. That's correct. Yes. Yes, indeed. See? Now, there's another scheme out there. I remember when they first started this, what, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago? Remember when it came out? Get an equity loan on your house and we will give you 125% of the value of your house. Yeah. Having been a loan broker and knowing how hard it was for me to get loans that were 90% of the value of the house, now here they come out advertising 125% of the value of your house. What did that tell me? That told me they know something that's going to happen in the housing market that no one else knows, that everything's going to escalate and inflate. And so what they want to do, they want to keep the ratio of their debt on these houses as high as they can. Now, what do we have today? If you're loaned to 125% of the value of your house and the market loses another 25%, you're 50% over the value of your house, right? As long as you're able to make the payments, you're okay. What's going to happen when you don't make the payments? You're going to lose it. And this is what is happening with the mortgage thing today. Just put in simple terms. And many of those loans that were going down were loans 100% financing on new purchases. Nothing down. And even some of them came along, and since the prices of houses were escalating, which a lot of this has happened to the here in California, to the Latino market, they said, we will bid higher than the asking price, and we will give you, say, we'll bid $20,000 higher, we'll get 100% financing, we'll give you the $20,000 so you can help make the payments for a year, and then we'll come back later and finance it at a lower rate. So that's what has happened.
They
never do. They spend the money and it's gone. Okay, now to get everybody in debt, the reason I'm going over this is because I want you to understand the precarious position that the whole world economic system is in. They want everybody in debt. So listen up. Get out of debt as much as you can. Now, there's a new thing out called reverse mortgage, which is aimed for retirees and senior citizens. Now, what do you have with most retirees and senior citizens? They've paid their houses off. So they come along and say, with this reverse mortgage, you say your value of your house is, say, today escalated, you know, like I wrote in a recent letter, in 1913 dollars, the U.S. dollar is only worth 4 cents. I think it's worth less than that, really, because there's no backing of it. See? So a $500,000 house would only be worth $20,000. But you take a house similar to ours, that by the time we bought the land, finished the house, and moved in, we had paid $75,000 for the whole thing. Well, recently I talked to a contractor and he says, boy, you could get $1 million out of this house. And I said, yeah, if I want to replace it, it'd cost me more than $1 million. So what they do, they come along to the retirees and say, now we know you're having a hard time making ends meet, so you can have money that you don't have to pay back. The house that you paid $75,000 for is now worth, we'll just say, $700,000. So in order for you to live comfortably and not have to worry about inflation, we will put a reverse mortgage on your house, which is this. It's like giving you a credit card for $200,000 or $300,000. And then you write checks against it. So as you write checks against it, they start accumulating that balance and charging you interest. Now, you don't have to make any payments on the interest because they add it on to the balance. So every month, whatever the seniors draw down is added to the principal amount plus the interest that would be due on that principal amount is added to the principal amount. So those who don't know what is happening are under the illusion that, well, hey, I can get this money at no cost. Now, if there is a downturn in the economy and the value of your house falls 50, 60, 70%, now then they're going to come along and say, whoop, we've got to change the game. Now, what is the principle with the, what does Proverbs tell us concerning the borrower and the lender? The borrower is the slave of the lender. Who is the ultimate deceitful lender? Satan. So the way that you control people is to get them all in debt with no options. What a scenario for setting up for the mark of the beast, huh? Now, as it was reported on it, and I'll finish here in just a few minutes. As it was reported on the news the other day, we are entering into a critical economic period for the next 60 to 90 days. Remember when the market dropped 500 points about 6 months ago, came back? About 3 weeks ago, bam, it went almost to 500 again. And all of these defaults on the mortgages, huge defaults on mortgages. Worldwide. Yes, worldwide. And we have been very wonderful in helping all of the other nations in the world share the debt because the investment companies have bundled all of these unrealistic mortgages and they have sold them to banks and individuals and investment groups overseas. So this creates a great worldwide economic problem, see. So, that's why I wrote the letter that I did about watch the economy, but they said that they are in a very precarious position. That's why they're holding down the price of gold and silver so there's not a run on it. They cannot afford people to get out of debt assets and get into real money, gold or silver. So, the way they're going to control it, and it may see us through for a while, which is this. They lower the base interest rate that the Federal Reserve and other reserve banks in the world have. So what does that do? That will lower the interest rate on these mortgages. And people will then to be able to make the payments. A greater number of people will. But, you know, most people are up to their eyeballs in debt. So they can manipulate that for a while, and they can make it work for a while. But you see, the big problem is they've got this debt worldwide, and it's going to be hard to hold it all together. Yeah, then they'll borrow more money and get deeper in debt. Okay. Comment was made that he heard that the interest rate was lowered and the futures market is way up. Okay, but what's going to happen, you see, there is going to be no currency in the world that is not going to be affected. And this becomes a very important tool to bring in a cashless worldwide digital monetary system, which will eventually come to the mark of the beast. And they're getting everybody ready for it by cartoon ads about fast food and buying things. Have you seen that? Yeah. See? Everybody's coming in with their new credit cards, and they go, they're getting everything's going real fast, and the credit card's swiping through, and just they get in, they get out, and everything's going wonderful. Then here comes some dud with money. Or some woman writing a check. And all the other buyers are there with glares of how dare you slow us down by using cash and writing a check. See, now we all think that's very funny, but what it really is, it's a psychological preparation for the mark of the beast. So, What's going to happen in the near future? I think they'll be able to manipulate us out of this to a certain extent, but it will only increase the danger and make the fall a lot harder later. Comment was made, and I'll end it here. They just build a new bridge where we come across to come up to church from Hollister up here to Fairfield, and they have two lanes of fast track. Now, fast track is this: you buy a barcode, you stick up in your upper left hand windshield corner, and you don't even have to stop. You buy. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if you send in $100 and then they give you $100 credit to work on and let you know when it gets down below that, you send in another $100 and you can go through at 60 miles an hour through the toll gate there. Okay, they have two of them. The rest of them are cash and fast track. And a comment was made, they're probably going to wean down the cash even more. And what if they make it just one line for cash at the end, and here's this long line of cars going back for those who are going to pay cash waiting to get across, and everybody else is going poop and poop and poop going right through. Okay, a couple other things were mentioned here economically in relationship to the dollar. The value of the dollar is continuing to fall because we have so much debt. And our government is really totally nonsensical in what they do. The Australian dollar and the Canadian dollar have been going up, 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 as well as the value of the euro. But I think the value of the euro going up is overinflated, and it's going to cut off a lot of trade for them. But nevertheless, the Canadian dollar used to be about, I think, down as low as 82 cents for $1. Now it's almost par. Likewise with the Australian dollar. And then you have this phenomena occurring in both Canada and Australia, which is this. The Canadians are selling their oil, their things to China, and they actually have a lot of Chinese up there in Canada helping extract the oil out of this oil sand up in Alberta, up near Edmonton. And so there's a big flux of Chinese coming in. Likewise, in Australia, they're finding in the desert uranium, gold, silver, copper, and all of those precious metals which China is using. And so we have, on the reverse side of it, we have China, which is a saving nation as well as a producing nation now, being able to dictate the terms in many places around the world what they are going to do. One other comment, and we'll end it here. Chinese have threatened to dump the dollar. I don't think they could because they would break themselves, but I think they are using that as a means to get the United States, when they want to annex Taiwan, that we will acquiesce without a fight. They'll say, okay, we won't dump them if you don't fight us when we want Taiwan. And I think that's the quid pro quo that they're going to do on that. Okay, end of the financial session here. We can't, in just these few minutes, cover everything, but at least it'll give you something to watch for. Now, I'm going to continue on with some comments. I've commented about some financial things and also need to mention that financially, we really need to get on top of our own financial situations the best that we can, get out as of much debt as we can. So we had trumpets the other day, and now we have Sabbath. And I don't know about you, but Friday seemed like Sunday. So today being Sabbath, it's, you know, kind of got things a little out of sequence as far as body rhythm of the days and so forth. But keep your eyes on what is happening, because as I mentioned before, there is a dollar index to watch. And that dollar index, as long as it stays 80 or above, the dollar is fairly stable. Well, it's been hovering between 80 and 78 here for a while. and you're watching the euro go up, the pound go up, and the yen goes up and down in relationship to it, because the yen has many of the same problems that we do with the dollar, which is not too unusual considering they mimic the Federal Reserve over there that we have here. And so they will be able to do some manipulation, see, since there, as I mentioned, there is no gold or silver to back the currency. They use supply of money and interest rate to bring some stability to it. And something that is also very interesting, which is this. All the monies that now work in the world economic system are all fiat money, and they all have central banks similar to the Federal Reserve. And as I mentioned previously, there is the International Bank of Settlement in Switzerland. So keep your eyes on that. Another thing, I'm going to pass on some things here that are interesting for you, especially now. Dolores brought this to my attention in a magazine that is actually has a lot of good information in it. It is called First. And here's an article that affects everyone. Now, I want you to stop and think also that many people, especially as we get older, are housebound. And too many times, too many of us sit around and do nothing, and then health problems knock us for a loop. So we need to have some kind of moderate exercise. Even if you live in an area where you have long winters, you've got to have something in the house where you can get some exercise. It can be a stationary bike if that's too much for you. They even have for senior citizens, which I'm one now myself, but I have my little exercise place where I have a stationary bike. I've got a treadmill, which in Australia they call a walker, which I think is a better name for it than a treadmill. And then I have a weight stanchion where I use the weights, and then I have some barbells that I use, and I have an ab board that I use, an ab lounge that I use. So I use all of those and try and exercise 3 to 5 times a week. And the reason that I do is because for years, before I had my hip operations, I sat around and did not do anything and did not exercise and didn't take care of my diet the way I should have. And so I'm still fighting the weight that was put on because of that. But that's my battle. You have your battle. Everyone has their own health problem. But what you need to do is don't wait around till you get sick and then run to the doctor, because that's exactly what the doctors are waiting to do. Now, some people do that, and all of a sudden they end up with a heart attack. And they haven't watched their health, haven't took care of themselves, and all of a sudden, bam, it hits them really hard. And then they end up going into the hospital, having a double bypass or triple bypass or quadruple bypass. And even one man I know had a 7 bypass. I don't know what you would call that. And then what happens in many cases like that, if you're not really healthy, that you end up having to be on so many drugs because now you're in the care of the doctor because you didn't take care of yourself previously and learn about health issues and learn about food and learn about supplements and learn about these things that you can do to help yourself. See, the reason that blood vessels get clogged up is because, number one, you're not getting omega-3 oils. Number two, you're eating too much soybean oil, soy products, and canola oil. And corn oil, those are devastating to the blood vessels. And then you sit, you get no exercise, you rarely ever breathe hard, and your blood never surges through your body. And some people, they end up that even the arteries going up to the brain become clogged, and they have to do a Roto-Rooter to open it up. And all of this is because of inactivity and improper diet. So these are things that the brethren need to watch out for and be careful of, because when times get tough, if you haven't taken care of yourself, then your health is going to break down even quicker. So here's another thing to watch for. Let's go to the next track.